the hint of a tremor around her mouth. "Come and sit down and tell us what this is all about." Steve Waters guided them to a sofa. "This shouldn't take long. Thank you, Dr. Waters."
"It's Mr. Waters. Sorry, not important. It's just surgeons are misters for some reason."
"Of course they are." Sparks cursed his stupidity. "Yes, sorry. Well, anyway, the postmortems of Alex O'Connor and Rosie Shaw were carried out today."
"Ah,"
Kate breathed. "It appears neither girl was alive when the fire started."
Kate held his gaze.
"How did they die, then?"
"There are still tests to complete, but we have strong indications that one of the girls was strangled."
Steve Waters gasped.
"And you've come all the way from Southampton to tell us this,"
Kate said.
"Why?"
She knew why. Sparks knew that she knew.
"Is this about Jake?"
Steve asked quietly.
"Yes, Mr. Waters, it is. We're launching a murder investigation, and this development has made it even more urgent that we speak to your son, to see what he may have seen or heard in the days and hours before the fire."
"Of course,"
Steve said.
"We also need a sample of Jake's DNA, from a hairbrush or toothbrush, that kind of personal item."
"You want his DNA? Absolutely not,"
Kate said loudly.
"You just said you wanted to talk to him as a possible witness. What are you not telling us? The Thai police haven't accused him of anything. It's only the papers who've pursued him, and there's nothing to connect him."
"We're gathering evidence all the time, Kate. The picture is getting clearer about what happened to Alex and Rosie. A DNA sample could rule him out of our inquiries."
There was a pause.
"We haven't got anything anyway," she said.
But she sounded less sure now.
"He didn't leave a toothbrush here. He'd left home. And we've cleared out his room."
"You'd be surprised what we can get DNA samples from. Can I send someone from forensics?"
"Oh, all right then. If it will help rule him out."
He could hear the fear in her voice, feeding her aggression.
"What else have you found out?"
"We'd prefer not to disclose that at the moment," Sparks said firmly, giving his sergeant a warning look. He didn't want to say anything about the sex swabs.
"I see,"
Kate said.
"When are you putting this out to the media? Are you holding a press conference?"
She was back in charge of the conversation, and Sparks found himself sitting up a bit straighter. He wondered if this was how her interviewees felt.
"Oh, God,"
her husband whispered to himself.
"They'll have to have one, Steve. It's the next step,"
Kate said.
"Yes," Sparks said. "We're planning one for the morning. We'll be asking for the public's help in tracing Jake and any other possible witnesses."
"Who else are you looking for?"
Kate asked.
Ever the reporter.
Chapter 43. Thursday, the 4th of September, 2014. The reporter. When they've gone, I go into the downstairs loo and lock the door. I can't bear to see Steve. He's sitting on the sofa with his head in his hands, and I think he may break down. I've only seen him cry a handful of times since I met him. When the boys were born, we'd cried together. Then when his dad died last year. And when I left him that time. The boys had been small and he'd never been there. Always at work or thinking about work. I'd just wanted to make him realise, but I'd gone too far. And it had taken months to get us back on an even keel. I felt detached when Bob was telling us about the postmortems. I sort of clicked into reporter mode, weighing the information, writing the intro in my head. But this is us. Not some story to be picked over for the best quote. They found someone's DNA on the girls. Rings in my head like an alarm. They will know who did this. Get a grip, Kate, I tell myself in the mirror. Jake had nothing to do with this, and Steve needs you. He looks up when I come back.
What are we going to do, Katie?
He says. I knew he'd ask that. He wants me to take charge of this, to make it all right.
What are we going to tell people?
Well, they know the police want to talk to Jake. It's been all over the press.
But they don't know the girls were murdered, do they?
One of them, I say. One of them was murdered. We don't know about the other.
For fuck's sake, Kate! Stop nitpicking! One girl or both girls, it doesn't change anything, does it?
It doesn't. I'm sorry. You're right. I agree. We need to tell the family, quickly, now. You ring your mum, and I'll ring Freddy. We pick up our phones, and I go into the hall. I can hear him apologising to Dorothy for ringing so late. She's probably in bed. We should have rung tomorrow morning. She won't sleep now.
Sorry, Ma, Steve says. Just wanted to let you know that there's been some news about the fire in Bangkok. Well, I suppose it's about Jake, in a way.
Freddy picks up, and I'm immediately thrust into the surround sound of a rowdy pub.
Mum, has something happened?
I want to shout. No! He's too young to bear the full load of my fears, but he's part of this.
Sort of. Can you go somewhere quieter for a moment, love?
Have you heard from Jake? Has he turned up?
No, not yet. There's some stuff that's going to be in the papers. One of the girls was murdered.
Not Jake, he whispers.
They don't know who killed her, Freddy, but they're going to announce a murder investigation in the morning and say they urgently need to speak to your brother. I wanted to warn you.
Oh, Mum.
I know, love, I know. They want a DNA sample to rule Jake out, I say, and hear how hollow this sounds. But we haven't got anything left of his at home.
I have, Freddy says. I've kept some of his T-shirts and that baseball cap he wore to annoy you.
Have you? I didn't know.
Yeah,
he says, and I hear the tremble in his voice.
They're in my cupboard. Stupid, I know, but they smelt of him. I missed him, Mum.
And I hadn't noticed. I'd been too busy putting on my own brave face.
I'm sorry, Freddy. We'll find him.
Later, Steve and I sit hugging our cups of coffee in silence. He had nothing to do with this, Steve, I say again.
No.
I'm going to find out who did do it. And I suddenly feel lighter.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find the people who were at the guest house. Find the others. That's what I'm good at.
Not being a mother, plainly. But I can do this.
Katie, Steve is saying, you can't make this right by banging on doors and hounding policemen. Jake is our son. We are responsible for him. And if he has done something wrong, we have to stand by him and help him take his punishment.
I stare at him. He doubts Jake. He can't be part of my plan. And I draw the fences closer around me. I ring Joe Jackson from the kitchen and give him the heads up about the postmortems. I can hear the excitement in his voice building as I drip feed him the details I've decided to share.
Dead before the fire started, he says. Strangled? Bloody hell! And I can file this now?
Yes, Joe. It's going to be put out there by the police in the morning. You'd better ring the O'Connors and the Shaws straight away. You can include a quote from me that this must be a heartbreaking development for the families, but there is nothing to connect my son with these deaths.
Got it.
And Joe, you owe me big time now. I'm going to call in favours. Understood?
Absolutely. Happy to help.
We'll see.
Bangkok, day 17. Tuesday, the 12th of August, 2014. Mama had given her a hard look when Alex asked for her own room. You're not sharing with Rosie? Alex had given her a hard stare back. No, I need another room, just for me. She was not in the mood to explain or discuss. She needed her own space. End of. Rosie's confession had left her shell-shocked. She had realised she didn't really know the girl sharing her room, but nothing could have prepared her for what Rosie had revealed. Her friend had stopped crying abruptly, perhaps sensing Alex wasn't buying the little girl act, and wiped her eyes on her T-shirt. She'd lain back on the pillows, speaking to the ceiling, maybe so she didn't have to see Alex's reaction, and announced that she had had to get away from home because she was going to fail her A-levels. I don't care, but my mum is going to go mad. How do you know you're going to fail? Maybe you're just being paranoid, Alex had said. I wish. I missed an exam, a whole paper. I went to a party that turned into an all-nighter. I hooked up with someone and didn't wake up in time. Mum thought I was on a study weekend with my biology group, but I needed to have some fun. I was sick of studying. I don't want to go to uni anyway. That's what my mum wants, not me. Now that she'd started, Rosie almost looked like she was enjoying herself. She was the centre of attention again, where she belonged. And everything was always someone else's fault. She was always the innocent victim. Never mind that. What about my money? Why were you stealing from me? I wasn't stealing it. I told you I was borrowing it. I'll pay you back. When? But Rosie was telling the bare light bulb hanging over her the next instalment of her sob story. I had to, Alex. Everything cost much more than I thought. The tattoo was 4,000 baht, remember? Even though I didn't have the big one. You didn't have to have it done, Alex exploded. But the excuses continued to flow as Rosie examined her glittery fingernails, which she had spent the afternoon painting. And everyone is ripping me off. Who? Well, the tattoo place, and the scooter bloke. What scooter bloke? For the first time, Rosie sat up and looked at her. It wasn't my fault, Alex. Honest. I hired a scooter from him. Lars wanted to ride round Bangkok on one, but he didn't have enough money for the deposit, so I paid it. It was a proper rental shop, and we were having a great time. But we left it outside a bar while we had a drink. It was all locked up, I swear. But when we came out, it was gone. The bloke went mad when we told him. He turned round and said I owed him thousands of baht to replace it. Seriously, what were you thinking? It's one of the best-known scams in Thailand. It's on every traveller's forum. These con men have duplicate keys to the bikes and steal them back themselves, then charge you. I didn't know. Whatever. Why didn't you tell me? Because I knew you'd go mad. I thought I could sort it out myself and you wouldn't need to know. Alex almost laughed. Almost. Did you tell the police? I wanted to, but the scooter shop man has my passport. I had to leave it as a guarantee when we hired the bike. I asked Mama if she'd come to the police with me, but she said I'd be arrested if I didn't have a passport and that the police would probably plant drugs on me. But she said if I gave her money, she'd pay them off. She'd sort it out. She said she'd make sure I didn't get into trouble. She says she's done it for foreigners before. Rosie stole a look at Alex before collapsing back and burying her face in the pillow. There was a stunned silence. All Alex could think was, "You've ruined everything." I should have told you, Rosie said quietly. You think? Have you told your mum? Of course not. What about your dad? Maybe he could lend you the money to get your passport back. Rosie sat back up and tried to laugh. He won't. I had to threaten to tell Imogen about his latest girlfriend to get the money to come here in the first place. I saw him snogging one of the shop assistants in a car outside his work. It was a bit of luck. He'd never have paid up otherwise. But he gave me the money to shut me up and get me out of the way. I don't know where he found it. He said he was completely broke, living on credit cards, but he did. Alex stared at her. Who are you? Running through her head. Here. Mama thrust a key into her hand. Ground floor, through there. As she pointed, Alex noticed that her silver-painted fingernails matched Rosie's. Thick as thieves, she thought. Thieves, anyway. Thanks. Alex shouldered her hastily packed bag and marched off into the gloom at the back of the guest house. Rosie came clattering down the stairs, calling her name, but Alex ignored her. She was too furious to say anything sensible. She'd tell Mags all about it. Mama, she knows, she heard Rosie say as she marched off.
Chapter 44. Friday the 5th of September 2014. The Detective. Mags Harding rang that morning.
I need to talk to someone about Alex O'Connor and Rosie Shaw, she told the switchboard, her voice shaking. I've just seen the news on the television. All right, let's slow down a bit. How do you know Alex and Rosie? The operator asked gently. Let's start there.
Minutes later, the teenager's call was put through to D.S. Salmond, who listened carefully, then pitched up at Sparks's office door.
We've had a call in about the girls, sir, she said.
That was quick. What are they saying? Anything about Jake Waters?
Yes, in a way. It's about what was going on before the girls died. What was really going on. The caller says that Alex was her best friend and wrote her emails about how things had gone wrong pretty much from the beginning. There were all sorts of problems and fights.
Really? What about?
Sex and drugs and rock and roll, it seems. According to the emails, Rosie and Alex were arguing over Jake Waters.
Were they?
So they definitely knew him. He was there.
Oh, yes. And there's much more. Rosie had got herself into trouble with a con man. And in her last email, Alex said she had caught her stealing her money. Oh, and that Rosie had blackmailed her father into giving her the money to go to Thailand.
Bloody hell. But why didn't our tech genius DC Collins see these emails on his trawl?
She used a different email account, one we didn't know about. She used it for private stuff, according to her best friend.
So, who is the best friend? I thought that was Rosie.
Apparently not. Call in was from Margaret Harding, known as Mags. She was the girl who was due to go to Thailand with Alex and dropped out.
Oh, yes, Rosie was a late substitute.
Alex was emailing Mags the whole time, apparently. The last message was on August the 12th, more than 48 hours after the parents got their final one. These emails paint a very different picture from the one we've seen on social media. The Bezzies on tour was a bit of fiction, it appears. Alex told Mags that she hated Rosie.
Why didn't she get in touch sooner, when the girls were first reported missing?
She'd been sworn to secrecy by Alex, and she didn't want to get anyone into trouble. The emails are pretty explicit, not parental reading material. And, like everyone else, she thought the girls would turn up. And then, when they did, she thought their deaths were an accident and no one needed to know about the emails. But they might, now it's a murder inquiry.
Right, let's have a look then. And get Collins onto it. The emails, sometimes three a day, catalogued the growing tension between the two girls in Bangkok. The fights, the silences, the anger, and the theft. Sparks started reading them out at random. Rosie is completely out of it tonight. Can't get any sense out of her.
Rosie is legless and sleeping her way through the boys in the guest house. This isn't why I came to Thailand. She's ruining everything.
Another row with Rosie. Had enough.
Rosie is hitting on Jake. Unbelievable.
Why didn't we know any of this before? He said.
We were told they were having a great time.
Salmond got up Alex's Facebook page.
Because that's what Alex wanted us to think. Look, for example, on August the 2nd, when she told Mags that Rosie was sleeping her way through the blokes, she posted a photo here on Facebook of the two of them clinking glasses. Living the dream with my roomie, it says here.
Why would she pretend to be having a good time? Salmond looked at him.
Because that's what she wants her friends to think. This is her public profile. It has nothing to do with what's really going on in her life.
Public profile, Sparks said. She was a schoolgirl from Winchester, not on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Ah, but we're all stars of our own reality shows now, sir. Didn't you know?
Shut up, Zara, what a load of bollocks. Whereas these, he waved at the screen, raised some bloody serious questions about what was really going on this trip. The drugs, the casual sex, the stealing, the high-risk behaviour. Was this why they died? We need a statement from Mags Harding, ASAP, and full access to her emails from Alex.
She's on her way in and bringing her phone so we can check it.
Right. Call me when she gets here. I want to be there for the interview.
I suppose I ought to call Bangkok with this, for appearances' sake.
I'll talk to the Thais, Salman said. The big question is, do we share this with the families?
Sparks scrolled back through the emails, giving himself time to think.
I think we have to. If we're passing them on to the Thai police, they may leak. I don't know how secure they'll be, and it'll be 100 times worse if they see them in the press first.
Do you want me to do it?
No, I will. Tell the family liaison officer I need to see them at midday, after we've interviewed Mags Harding. I'll go to them. I'm going to tell Mike Shaw first, as he's the star turn in these. He might clam up in front of the others. Then, his ex-wife and the O'Connors. Don't imagine that's going to be pretty.
He tried to imagine Jenny Shaw's reaction when he told her.
Disbelief, probably. No one wants to hear that their child has a dark side, especially when she's dead.
And the last line Alex had written to Mags was ricocheting round his skull. It said simply, I hate Rosie. I could kill her.
Chapter 45. Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. The Reporter. I've watched the press conference 3 times already. The highlights playing on a loop and on the ticker tape running underneath the perky Sky News presenter. Each time they use the photo of Jake I gave them, I close my eyes as if it's too bright to look at directly. I know it's coming. It's in exactly the same slot in the report. But it shakes me each time. Closes me down. I'd decided to go into work this morning, but Steve was horrified at the idea. Why would you? He'd said. Why wouldn't I? You are, I'd snarled. That's different, isn't it? He'd wanted to say his was a proper job that mattered, that people's lives depended on him. But he held himself back, probably telling himself that now wasn't the time. But I didn't let him get away with it. Why should I? What? What were you going to say? That my job isn't as important as yours? Stop it, Katie. I wasn't going to say anything about your job. Look, neither of us has slept. We're both horribly stressed, and you've been told to stay at home. I'm going to be late for my first patient. I've got to go. Go back to bed. I'd let him kiss me goodbye and continued our row in my head while the kettle boiled. I won. I think I did. I wasn't going back to bed. I'd get on with something. Keep busy. But here I am instead, sitting and watching the rolling news and closing my eyes every 15 minutes. It is Joe who breaks the Gogglebox spell. I put my phone on silent and left it on the hall table to avoid talking to reporters. I hear it buzzing on the polished wood and turn up the telly. But Joe comes to my door and knocks. Rap, rap, rappity-rap. I've taught him well. I pull aside the net curtains and see him, in shirt and tie, looking at my flowers. I know they need watering, I say when I open the door. Come in quick. Is anyone else out there?
No, I did a recce before I knocked. Golden rule number 120, isn't it?
Shut up. Coffee?
Go on, then. It'll be my third this morning. I'll be flying when I leave here.
Why are you here, anyway? Why aren't you with the parents? Does Terry know?
Not exactly. I've filed the presser, and they've sent Gail from Features down to do the big interview.
Should have been me, I think, like the abandoned girlfriend at the back of the church. But Gail will do a lovely job.
I told Terry I'm meeting a contact. Well, I am, really. You're my best contact.
That, Joe, is tragic. Contacts are people who can tell you things, people who know stuff, like coppers and politicians.
Like you,
he says. And he's right. I know the stuff he wants. So big brownie points from Terry for the scoop last night, I imagine, I say, to veer the subject away from me. He grins, a look of pure happiness.
He said, fuck. Terry's never said that before about any of my stories.
I'm happy for you. Now sit down, and I'll tell you what we're going to do. We've made a list. I like a list. a tiny piece of order in a chaotic world. We're going to find the other witnesses, but we need more info to stand any chance of tracking anyone down.
What have we got? Joe says.
I've rung Ross in Bangkok, Jake's friend. He says there were a couple of Dutch boys at the guest house. He thinks one might be called Lars?
Well, we're halfway there then.
Sarcasm is banned from this desk, I say, banging the kitchen table. Okay, where is the information we need?
Internet, traveller forums, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter,
Joe says, his fingers twitching for a keyboard. Yes, yes, but what about the actual people who know?
Well, Jake, obviously.
I shoot him a look. We've already had the he had nothing to do with the death of those two girls conversation. And Rosie and Alex, I say. Joe looks confused. They were writing home, weren't they? Well, Alex was. Rosie seems to have left it to her to pass on their news. Alex can't just have been texting and emailing the parents. She was all over social media, so there might be other emails. We need to see them. She'll have dropped in all sorts of little bits and pieces of gossip about the others in that godforsaken hostel. Joe lifts his head and raises his eyebrows, and I nod. Yes, there may be stuff about Jake, too, but it could be information that will help him.
I'll call dear Salmond. I'm ringing her every day anyway. She's too busy to talk usually, but she might help.
You need to work at it, Joe, to get her on side. Chat to her about the case, about the hours she's working, about police pay, about other stuff. You need to build a connection. Show her you're a reporter she can trust.
Sounds a bit touchy-feely to me.
Being a reporter is touchy-feely, you idiot. We're not here to observe the news happening through a telescope or Google. You've got to plunge yourself into this job so you can feel things, see things up close, understand them. You've got to get your hands dirty, right up to the elbows.
All right, I've got it. Do I need to write it down?
I go to swipe him with my notebook and laugh. I could hug him for making me laugh. Right, lecture over. So don't barge in today with a request to see the emails. She'll say no and put everyone on their guard. Who else has got them?
Mum and Dad?
I saw the ones they got when I did the first interview. They were pretty tame stuff about temples and tuk-tuks. We need to find the friends the girls confided in.
I'm all over it,
Joe says, bending over, not speaking, scribbling notes before he burrows his way into the ether.
Chapter 46. Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. The Mother. She'd watched the press conference too many times. So many times that she caught herself mouthing the words of D.I. Sparks along with him, while she waited for the photo of Alex and Rosie to pop onto the screen just after the headline. And the photo of Jake Waters. She taped the whole segment and frozen the frame with his face staring out of the screen. Not the horrible photo on the beach where he looked like the devil, but a new one where he looked like someone's son. He'd got glasses on and had wavy hair and a lopsided smile. "Did you do this?" she asked the face. "Could you have done it?" She tried to imagine her own son hurting someone, but the image wouldn't come. Not her boy, then. But could someone else's? Could Kate's? She looked up, startled, when Malcolm appeared at the door. "Stop torturing yourself," he sighed. "I keep looking for some sign in his face, Mal. What do people who strangle girls look like? Do they look like that? Normal?" "I don't know, love. The police know about this sort of stuff, not me. I can't bear to keep going over and over what happened. I feel so terrible that I couldn't stop it." He sat down and cried silently, his shoulders heaving. Leslie looked at him and then back at the screen. She hit the rewind button and then play, focusing on Bob Sparks's face. She'd boiled two eggs for breakfast and then lost heart, leaving them to harden and turn grey in the cooling water. Malcolm had still been sitting white-faced in the front room. She draped a throw from Alex's bed round his shoulders, without saying a word, leaving him to his grief. She couldn't take his on as well. Not today. Wendy Turner rang at 10. "Wendy, is there any news? Has someone phoned in? Have they found Jake Waters?
Hello, Leslie. I see you were bothered by a reporter last night. You could have called me. That's what I'm here for.
It was very late. I didn't want to bother you. And Joe Jackson already had the information anyway. We couldn't stop him writing it, could we?
No, I suppose not. Anyway, I'm calling to arrange a meeting with D.I. Sparks. He wants to see you all to talk through some things. Can he come at midday?
Yes, of course. He can come earlier if he wants. What is this about?
No, midday is what he said. Let's wait until he gets there, okay? It wasn't, but nothing was within her control anymore. She'd have to bear the weight.
How are you doing, Leslie? Wendy was asking her. Terrible. Malcolm has shut down completely, and I'm just going through the motions.
It might be worth talking to the doctor about getting something to help you cope.
We don't need pills. We just need to find out who killed Alex.
I know, but pills might help you get through this period of uncertainty. Period of uncertainty. A new euphemism to add to the lexicon, Leslie thought. This difficult time, your sadness, your grieving. No one has said, while we find your daughter's murderer yet. I wonder how long it will be before they do.
Thanks, Wendy. I'll talk to Mal about it.
She sat holding the phone in her hand, staring into space. This stasis was killing her. She dialed Kate Waters.
Where is he? She screeched. Where is your murderer son?
Who is this? Kate whispered, shock muting her voice.
Leslie, it's Leslie. Did you know what he'd done when you were pretending to be so concerned about us?
Of course I didn't. What is the matter with you? You were talking about my child. My son hasn't murdered anyone. The press and the police have got it completely wrong.
That isn't what they're telling us.
What are they telling you? Look, I understand how distraught you are, but my son had nothing to do with your daughter's death. Please believe me.
You can't possibly be sure. You weren't there. And he was a druggie when he was at college, before he got chucked out. You said you didn't know about that either. So, really, you don't know much about him, do you?
Kate put the phone down. Leslie tried to savour a moment of triumph, but she felt as dead as the line.
Chapter 47. Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. The Detective. Sparks cleared his throat.
I'm very sorry you were bothered by the media last night, he said, his nervous energy making his coffee cup ring like a bell as he stirred it.
Bloody reporters, Jenny snapped. Who told Joe Jackson about the post-mortem results? We certainly didn't.
The others shook their heads firmly. They were crammed into Jenny's tiny kitchen this time, him, Wendy Turner, and the O'Connors. He looked at their tense faces and was quietly glad Mike Shaw wasn't there. Sparks had gone to see him first at the carpet showroom. Shaw had looked sweaty and ill, sitting in his office come stockroom. He'd moved some flooring samples from a chair for the detective, and they'd sat, knees almost touching.
How are you bearing up? Sparks had said.
They were so close he could smell the saccharine note of chewing gum on Shaw's breath and the stale cigarette smoke beneath. He'd sat back an inch, trying to find some personal space.
Shit, Shaw had said. I'm feeling shit. Sorry, but this is a fucking nightmare.
Sparks had nodded sympathetically.
You must feel like that. It's a terrible time for you all.
And about to get worse.
Mike, now that we know more about how the girls died, we need to piece together what was going on in that guest house. I need your help.
Shaw had looked at him properly for the first time.
My help, he'd said. What can I tell you? I was thousands of miles away when this all happened. I hadn't heard from Rosie since before she left. I don't know anything.
He'd spread his hands out in front of him. Sparks had reached for a folder he'd put on the floor beside him.
I want to show you some emails that Alex sent to a friend about Rosie, he'd said. They may be important.
Shaw's eyes had widened, and he'd reached for the sheaf of paper.
"I should warn you that you are mentioned," Sparks had added.
Mike Shaw's hand had faltered, but he'd taken the printouts. Sparks had watched as his eyes darted over the lines and knew he'd found the incendiary quote when his face suddenly sagged.
"Oh, God! Has Jenny seen these?"
"This is all about you, then. Not your dead daughter," Sparks had noted as he'd shaken his head.
"Not yet. I'm meeting the others in half an hour. I thought it would be fairer for you to see them first."
"As I'm the one having his character assassinated,"
Shaw had loosened his tie. "Will you be coming to the meeting?"
"What do you think?"
he'd muttered.
"I wasn't going to go anyway. To be honest, I thought it best to keep out of the way with how things are between me and Jenny. We had another row after you left last night. She accused me of abandoning her and Rosie all over again. I just can't deal with it any more, Inspector. Malcolm said he'd call me afterwards."
Shaw had opened a drawer in his desk and taken out a packet of cigarettes.
"I'll open a window," he'd said, after lighting one and inhaling deeply.
"That would be good," Sparks had said. "Isn't it illegal in the workplace?"
"Oh, bloody hell, go on, arrest me."
Shaw had smiled grimly. Sparks had waved the smoke towards the window and carried on.
"I realise how difficult this is," he'd said, "but I need to ask you if what Rosie told Alex is true. About Rosie forcing you to give her money."
Shaw had sat up straight and stubbed the cigarette out in what Sparks hoped was an ashtray hidden in the drawer.
"I can't see that it has anything to do with what happened," he'd said.
"We need to test the truth of what Alex says. She also says Rosie was taking drugs, that there was jealousy over men they'd met, and rows. That may have something to do with what happened. You do see that, Mike?"
Shaw had opened and closed his mouth as if about to deny everything, but ended up nodding wearily.
"I don't know if Rosie took drugs before she went. She might have done. I didn't really know what she was doing. I should have, but Jenny made it as difficult as possible. Changing arrangements, cancelling visits at the last minute. I saw her less and less. She used Rosie to punish me for leaving, for being happy with Imogen."
"But your daughter came to see you about the trip," Sparks had prompted.
"Yes, Rosie came."
He put his head in his hands.
"I hadn't seen her for ages. I thought when she got older, she'd be free to choose to see me. But I guess Jenny had done a good job of turning her against me. Anyway, there was a horrible scene. She saw me having a quick fumble with one of the girls here. It was nothing, really. The sort of thing that happens in offices every day," he'd said.
"Well, maybe in your office," Sparks had thought, glad Zara Salmond wasn't there to bristle at the boys will be boys remark.
"But Rosie overreacted. Said she'd tell Imogen. My new wife wouldn't have understood."
Shaw had looked away.
"You can imagine."
Sparks had nodded, and Shaw had ploughed on.
"I had to stop her, and she said she wouldn't say a word if I gave her the money for the bloody holiday."
"And where did you get the money? You told me you were paying the mortgage by credit card."
Shaw had laughed, a bark of fake amusement.
"Don't play games with me, Inspector. You know where Rosie got it. From my mother."
"Did you arrange the transfer from her account?"
"I can't remember."
"And did your mother know?"
Shaw had stood to end the conversation.
"This is old ground, Inspector, and we have covered it. My mother has withdrawn the allegation that money is missing. I'm sure you've got more important things to be getting on with, like finding out how my daughter died."
"Yes."
Sparks had stood too and taken back the printouts.
"I'm going to show the emails to your ex-wife now."
"I'll make sure to switch my phone off," Shaw had said. "What a fucking nightmare!"
There were tiny stacking stools to sit on in Jenny Shaw's kitchen, and everyone looked as if they were balancing on one cheek. I don't know who told Joe Jackson, Sparks said. Well, he didn't for sure. He could take a good guess, but he didn't want the discussion to disappear down that rabbit hole for the next hour. He cleared his throat again, indicating a change of subject, but Leslie was deaf to his non-verbal signals. The emails were going to remain the elephant in the room, swinging its trunk, biding its time.
Never mind that. Have you heard of any sightings of Jake Waters since the press conference? She said. Where is he?
No, Leslie, but we are getting helpful calls from the public. They weren't. They were the usual no-hopers.
He looks like the bloke in the chip shop, except the chip shop bloke's black,
was his favourite so far. He squeaked his stool closer to the table and leaned forward to try to gain their full attention. Oh, I've come to tell you about some information we've received this morning.
What information? What are you talking about? They chorused.
We've been made aware of some emails that Alex sent to a friend talking about difficulties she and Rosie were having.
Difficulties? Alex didn't tell us about any difficulties. She said they were having a great time, Leslie said. And why are we only hearing about them now?
He sighed. Because we've only just heard about them. Jenny was speaking over them both, demanding to be heard.
Tell us what is in these emails.
Well, there are a number of them. They were written to Margaret Harding.
Mags! She didn't say a word about them to me, Leslie said,
alarm making her voice loud and high-pitched. The walls of the kitchen bounced the sounds, distorting everything into an angry buzz.
I called her right at the beginning to ask if she'd heard from Alex, and she said she'd heard nothing, just like us. Then she rang us to say how sorry she was when we got back from Thailand. Why didn't she say anything to us about this?
Sparks held up his hand to halt the flow. She'd promised Alex she wouldn't say anything at the time. The emails contained some tricky stuff that Alex didn't want you to know about. Mags is a teenager. Sometimes they don't make the best decisions. No doubt you'll have a lot of questions, but maybe it would be better if you read the emails before we discuss them.
Do they mention drugs? Leslie said, cutting him off.
Yes.
Show them to us,
Jenny barked.
Please,
Malcolm added. Sparks pulled out the printouts, and DC Wendy Turner handed them round as he left them to read. He went out into the hallway. I'll just check in with the office while you're looking at them, he said, desperate to escape for a moment. He looked at the photos of Rosie near the front door. Birthdays through the years. Variations on a girl in a party dress, blowing out candles on a cake and smiling for the camera. The growing tension in the kitchen seeped out into the narrow hall, eddying round his feet as he texted Salmond. It was unbearable. The parents exclaimed quietly when they hit the first signs of trouble, the first accusation, but just,
oh,
nothing more. Then they edged forward in an eerie silence, perhaps unsure of what they would find next. 10 minutes later, he was called back in by DC Turner. He could see the distress in their faces.
Has anyone else seen these?
Malcolm took the lead. Only dear Salmond and myself, and Mike.
Mike's seen them? Jenny shrieked. When? Why did he see them first? Why isn't he here now to answer your questions?
I saw him on his own this morning, Jenny.
He couldn't face us, could he? Cowardly bastard. And up to his old tricks again, still messing around with the office girls. The saintly Imogen won't forgive him, will she? Stop it, Jenny.
Leslie slapped her hand down on the table.
This is not about you and your marriage breakdown. We need to focus on the girls.
Jenny reddened.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. It just brings everything back.
That's natural, Jenny, DC Turner said quietly, closing the subject.
Who else is going to see these emails?
Malcolm doggedly pursued his question.
We won't be sharing them with anyone else, apart from the Thai police at this stage, Sparks said carefully.
Thank God, Jenny said. Isn't it enough that she's dead? Does she have to have her character dragged through the mud?
Sparks left that hanging. None of them looked at each other while he talked about the possible ramifications of the information.
Alex talks about other people at the guest house. Rosie's friend, possibly boyfriend, Lars, and the other Dutch boy, Diederik. And a boy she names as Jake and J.W., who she likes.
Jake Waters,
Leslie said quietly.
The stoner, she called him. He's in loads of these emails. And she doesn't always like him. She says she wishes he would get out of her face in one of them. And anyway, most of this isn't true.
Jenny added suddenly. The O'Connors wheeled round to look at her.
Oh, Jenny, Leslie said. Of course it is.
Her daughter's litany of blame was dancing in Sparks's head.
My daughter wouldn't steal money. And she didn't take drugs, Jenny insisted,
but her voice trembled.
We don't know what they were doing, Leslie said.
No, Sparks thought.
Why didn't Alex tell us how unhappy she was?
Leslie whispered to her husband.
Why did she pretend?
I don't know, love, Malcolm said. They were young and on their own. We all did foolish things when we were that age.
I just don't believe it. I'm sorry, Jenny stated, as if for the record. We can't have this conversation now, Leslie said. You're too upset to think straight. Shut up, Leslie, I'm not, Jenny screeched. I know exactly what I'm saying. This is all lies.
Chapter 48. Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. The Reporter. After I put the phone down on Leslie, I can't speak. It isn't just rage at the hideous injustice of it. I feel shocked and bloodied, as if I've been physically attacked. Where is your murderer son? Bangs against my heart. In the silence, I slide down the wall to the hall carpet, trying to catch my breath and my thoughts, trying to hoist my Jake is innocent banner out of the dirt. I don't know if Joe has heard any of it, but when he puts his head round the kitchen door, I have my answer. He looks as ashen as I feel.
Are you okay? Was that Leslie O'Connor?
He says. I nod. She's upset, he tries to comfort me.
She doesn't know what she's saying.
But she does. I don't want to talk about it. Come on, let's get on with something useful, I say, and try to lever myself up. How far have you got?
I've found someone,
he says, pulling me to standing. It has taken Joe less than 30 minutes to locate a Max Harding, the original travel companion, who featured heavily on Alex's Instagram account back in the day. He rings the news desk to say he's going to Hampshire on a tip, and we head out to his car. What did they say? I ask, plugging my phone into his charger.
Sounds interesting. It's what they always say when they're not listening.
It's good to be off radar sometimes, Joe. Come on, let's get a wiggle on. He drives like Postman Pat, sticking to the speed limit all the way, even when I shout, For God's sake, why are you driving at 1 mile an hour? You're not 90. Put your foot down.
And how many speeding tickets have you had this year?
He says.
You could probably pay for a new car with the fines.
That shuts me up, but I'm still screaming in my head when he slows for every traffic light. Max Harding is waiting for us at a burger bar. Her suggestion, obviously. She'd been excited when Joe had rung her from the house. We were her first reporters, she told him. Bingo! I'd crowed when he told me. First in. I let Joe order the double cheeseburgers for him and Mags. I'll have a coffee, thanks, while I warm her up. I introduce myself as Kate, Joe's colleague. No surname to trigger any alarms. How are you doing? You must be so upset about Alex, I say, opening the door to our chat.
Yes. We'd been best friends since primary school. I still can't believe it's happened. First the fire, and now they're saying she was murdered.
Tears fill her eyes, and she chews at a nail. You were supposed to go with Alex to Thailand, weren't you? The finger comes out of her mouth, and I notice a tiny sliver of nail drop onto the table. Max flicks from sorrow to wide-eyed teen drama and back again. I can see her thinking about her escape from the clutches of death, starring in her own Survivor's special.
It could have been me, couldn't it? I said that to my mum. If I'd gone, if I hadn't dropped out, it could have been me. It's so horrible.
Absolutely. Why didn't you go, Max?
It was the money. I really wanted to go, and I kept thinking I'd start saving the next week, but it didn't happen. I just couldn't afford it. I kept putting off telling Alex. I thought she'd go mad. It was all she talked about. Thailand.
And did she go mad?
No. I think she was too shocked to say much. I still feel guilty. I kept saying sorry, but I let her down, didn't I?
She wants me to say she didn't. I pause while Joe puts the burgers on the table and disappears to fetch my drink.
You mustn't beat yourself up.
Her mum said she was having a brilliant time over there before all this, I say, watching her hand hovering over the stack of animal snouts and eyelids.
Well,
Mag says. She takes a bite, and limp lettuce falls out onto the table. She doesn't bother to pick it up. Salad's clearly not her thing. Joe sits down and joins her. I wait them out. It will only take a couple of minutes for them to devour their meal. Max wipes her mouth with a serviette and smiles at me with shiny lips.
Better? I ask, and she nods. Sorry, I was starving.
So I was saying that Alex's mum said she was having a great time in Thailand. Max pulls a face.
Not really. Actually, she was having a terrible time with Rosie.
Why? I thought they were best mates.
No, I was Alex's best friend, Max corrects me. Rosie was the last-minute substitute. I couldn't believe she was going with her. I said to her, "Are you sure, Alex? Do you even know anything about her?" But she said it'd be okay. I knew it wouldn't. They didn't go out together at the weekends like we did. Rosie hung around with the dangerous sisters at college, the girls who slept around and got drunk all the time. She wasn't one, a dangerous sister. Her mum kept her on a tight leash after her dad left, but she wanted to be.
And that wasn't Alex's idea of fun?
No way. People probably think we're a bit geeky. We like Harry Potter, she adds.
So how did they get on in Thailand?
Not good. Rosie was a complete nightmare, Alex said.
Did you speak to Alex then? Joe says. FaceTime her?
Once, right at the beginning, but the time difference kept catching us out. We emailed most days instead.
She must have been so glad to have you to talk to, Joe says.
I sip my coffee and sit back. We've always been able to talk. Peas in a pod, our mum said. We told each other everything. She knew I wouldn't tell anyone else, and I didn't. Her mum rang me when Alex stopped emailing, but I kept my promise. I said I hadn't heard from her that week. I wish I'd said something then, but I couldn't show Leslie some of the stuff Alex wrote. It was about drugs and sleeping with boys. Parents never want to hear that, do they? I only went to the police when they said Alex was murdered.
The police? When did you do that? I ask.
Just this morning, actually. I thought that was why you got in touch.
Right, I say, moving swiftly on. Anyway, it was a very good thing to do, Max, I say, and she looks grateful.
I'm not sure Jenny, Rosie's mum, will think so.
Why? Because the email said Rosie was having a wild time.
Well, yeah, but more because she'd stolen money from Alex and blackmailed her dad into paying for the trip.
Max picks up the last of her onion rings and dips them in tomato sauce while I try to keep my face straight. That would be upsetting, I admit. When did all this happen?
It was in the last email I got from Alex, a couple of days before the fire. She wrote to say she'd just caught Rosie trying to get off with the bloke Alex liked, and then going through her handbag. She'd stolen nearly £200, spent it on a tattoo and God knows what. And then Rosie had turned round and said she'd caught her dad kissing another woman, and she said she'd tell his new wife if he didn't give her money. Alex was so shocked. She told me she was going to leave Rosie there. She was considering coming home. Then nothing.
Wow, Joe says. That's insane.
I know. I'd never have believed it if Alex hadn't told me herself. Look, here, you can read the email.
Good boy, Joe. Max hands him her phone and he scrolls down, tutting and raising his eyebrows like a pro.
You don't mind if I take a copy of this?
He says, and Max shrugs.
Sure.
I'll forward it to my email, and I'll put my number in your phone so you can contact me again.
She smiles and twirls a lock of hair between greasy fingers.
Can I take a photo of you?
He asks, picking up his own phone.
Bangkok, day 17. Tuesday, the 12th of August, 2014. Alex's new room was next door to the dorm, and she could hear the murmur of the boys' voices as she vented her anger in an email to Max, listing Rosie's crimes in capital letters and ending, "I hate Rosie, I could kill her." She wondered if she should tell someone else about the missing money, about Rosie, about Mama. Maybe Jake can help, but what can he do? The money's gone. I'm never going to see it again. But people should know what's going on, shouldn't they? Mama could do it to them too. Alex went to stand in the shower, wanting to block out her thoughts and sluice off the sour stickiness of her spent fury. It was a horror show in there. The smell of slimy tiles and testosterone marking it out as the boys' bathroom. She automatically filled the holes in the plasterboard walls with new twists of toilet roll before taking her clothes off. She was more careful since the shadow at the window of their room. She closed her eyes and tried not to breathe until she was under the cold water. She didn't want to get dressed in the swamp, so she wrapped a towel around herself, grabbed her clothes and crept back to her room. But as she turned the key, Jake suddenly appeared from the dorm. "Alex, what are you doing down here? Don't tell me you've used our shower. That must have been traumatic." She clutched her towel and clothes tighter, her exposed skin prickling under his intense gaze. "I've moved into my own room. Look, I need to get dressed." "Are you okay? You look upset. Are we still going for that drink tonight, when I finish my shift? Come and find me in the bar when you're dressed." She nodded and got through the door as quickly as possible. He was so nice. Maybe he'd know what to do. The beer was poured ready for her on the counter when she emerged. The bar was busy and Jake was serving, so she perched on a stool and waited. Across the room, she could see Rosie deep in conversation with Mama. They looked up as if they could feel her eyes on them, but Alex turned back to the bar. She didn't want to talk to either of them. "Keep calm," she told herself. "It's not you who's done anything wrong." So why did she feel like she had? "All right," Jake asked when the crowd thinned. "Is your beer still cold? Jamie bought it for you." "Yes, thanks." She turned to seek out Jamie. He was sitting alone and stony-faced at a table at the back of the room. She raised the glass in thanks to him and took a sip. "So what's going on? Why have you moved out?" Jake said. "Although I can probably guess." "Can you?" "I doubt it." He raised his eyebrows. "Well, I've heard you arguing." "It's a long story," Alex said, suddenly unsure of what she wanted to tell. "We've got all evening. I finish in a couple of hours," Jake said, and smiled. It was the smile that did it. It made Alex melt inside. "Rosie has stolen my money," she said. "Rosie? Really? Are you sure?" He looked over at the accused and Alex saw her former roommate raise her head. She must have heard her name. Rosie pulled a face and turned back to the ever-attentive Mama. "Yes, I caught her going through my bag, and she admitted it. But that's not the worst thing. She's been scammed out of a load of money by some bloke who rented her a scooter that got stolen." Jake's lovely eyes narrowed. "And Mama has scared her to death by saying the police will get involved and plant drugs on her." She didn't get to tell him about Rosie paying Mama to help her, a customer ticking down to the other end of the bar to make a complicated cocktail before she could continue. And she sipped her beer again. It was flat. She took a handful of peanuts from a bowl on the counter. When Jake returned, he picked up the conversation as if there'd been no break. "Well, the scooter thing is in the Ladybird book of scams, but getting arrested? Perhaps Rosie's ramping it up to distract you from the fact that she's nicked your cash. make you feel sorry for her. She pulls the little girl lost thing quite a lot, I've noticed. She's a bit of a nightmare, really, isn't she? I thought I was the only one who knew, Alex said gratefully. She said you all thought I was a misery, bringing everyone down. I wouldn't believe everything she says. No one thinks that. We all think you're a hero coping with Princess Rosie. Alex tried to smile. What about the money, though? Have you got enough to carry on? What are you going to do? I don't know. You could talk to Mama about it, he said carefully. Mama? I think she might be part of the problem. What do you mean? She knows a lot of people, that's all I'm saying. She knows how things work. She's helped me in the past. How? Well, things got a bit sticky last year. The police were being difficult about my visa and she sorted it out. I owe her. Well, she's made it clear she doesn't like me. But I'll think about it. Got customers. Let's talk about it later, he said as a crowd of noisy travellers flooded in. Later, she couldn't pinpoint exactly when she'd started to feel ill. The evening had seemed to disappear. It had blurred at the edges at some point. She remembered Mama's face looming up at her, but Alex's mouth had felt as if it had stopped working, so words fell out half-formed, and she was swaying dangerously on her stool. She needed to get to a toilet, but she didn't know where she was. Was she still in the bar? What's happening to me? She'd wanted to say, but all she'd heard was a series of slurred sounds. She'd felt hands lift her, then nothing. When she woke the first time, her head was hammering, and when she tried to push herself up, she vomited on the floor by the bed. She felt too weak to care and closed her eyes against the daylight. When she woke the second time, was it the second time? It felt like it was getting dark again and the vomit had gone. A plastic bowl was beside the bed. She tried to get up but her leg shook too much and she crashed back down. The sound brought Jamie to her door. How are you feeling? He said. You look terrible. I'll get you some water. Alex didn't speak. She opened her mouth and immediately retched. Her ribs and stomach muscles felt bruised and she ached as if she'd been punched repeatedly. Lie still, Jamie said. I won't be a minute. What happened to me? She croaked when he returned with a glass. I don't know. Maybe you ate something bad. You collapsed near the loos, you poor thing. You've been so sick. She tried to remember what she'd eaten. The peanuts? She'd only had a couple of handfuls. But her head hurt too much to think. I put you to bed. I've been popping in and out to make sure you're okay. Tears leaked out of Alex's eyes onto the pillow. I feel so ill, she said. I wish my mum was here. Jamie sat on the bed and stroked her hair. Don't worry, I'll look after you. Does Rosie know I'm ill? When Jamie didn't answer, she gripped his arm. Tell her to text our mums to let them know we're okay. I didn't do it yesterday. They'll worry. And Rosie never remembers. And don't say I'm ill. My mum will fret. Will do. Now sleep. Alex lay as still as she could to avoid triggering the retching. She reached a hand under her pillow for her phone, but it wasn't there. She'd find it later, she told herself.
Chapter 49. Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. The Reporter. Joe is going to drop me back home, but as we drive up the street, I see reporters sitting on my garden wall. Reverse ferret, I say, ducking down into the footwell, and Joe drives past and turns into the next side street. How many were there? I say, as I scrabble back into my seat.
Three, and a photographer. It's probably the agencies. They looked very young.
I almost laugh. Like you? He grins at me.
Oh, but I drive like an old man. Where are we going?
Just to the corner. Leave me here, I say, when we get to the end of the alleyway at the back of my terrace. I'll ring you when I've combed through the emails. He's forwarded the whole email thread to me, hundreds of words in scores of messages that began on July the 27th and unspool to August the 12th. We've agreed he won't file anything from them yet. There's a lot of work to do, Joe. None of this info has been checked, especially stealing the money. Alex O'Connor could have made the whole thing up. We need to work it first. He'd nodded, but I could see the disappointment. I creep along the back of the houses, waving to next-door Bet in her garden. She's putting washing out and waves at me. I put my finger to my lips and point to the front of the house, and she smiles conspiratorially and beckons me into her kitchen.
"Come in,"
she says, pushing her moggy Albert off a formica stool.
"Take the weight off your feet."
"Have they bothered you, Bet?"
"They've tried. I told them to F off, bloody vultures. One kid called me Love, cheeky bugger."
I smile at the thought of someone trying to butter up Bet. God knows I tried at first, when we moved in a million years ago. But she can spot insincerity a mile off, and is impressed by nothing. She's what my dad would have called her own person. She's looking at me for my response, but I can hardly join in slagging off the press. "They're just doing their job, Bet. They'll push off eventually. Ignore them."
"Hard when they're saying those things about Jake. I told them. He's a lovely boy. Known him all his life, and he wouldn't hurt a fly."
Her words are unexpectedly kind, and I don't manage to steel myself in time. As I sit and cry, she rummages for tissues, then brings pink loo roll instead.
"Better out than in," she says as consolation. "You mustn't hold things in. Bad for you."
I sniffle pathetically and try to pull myself together. "I'd better go, Bet. I've got to make calls to the family."
"Take this packet of biscuits. I bet you're not eating properly."
I tuck the digestives into my handbag.
"Will you be talking to Freddy? Give him my love, won't you? How's he doing? What does he think about it all?"
"He's being very supportive," I say, but I don't really know what Freddy thinks anymore. I wonder if he blames me for Jake staying away, for him getting into this mess. We'll have to be very careful about what we say to each other. I'll try to protect him, but perhaps he'll do the same for me. He might be more open with Steve. They can talk about me. I'll ring him again tonight. I hurry round to my back gate and lock it behind me. We never usually lock it, never had to before. The boys used to ride their bikes home from school and stick them in the shed before bursting through the back door. It's been so long, the key has got rusty in the keyhole, and I struggle with it. Then I stand in the sunshine for a moment, hidden from everyone by the tall brick walls that separate the gardens and watched by Albert, now lounging on our shed roof. I need time to think. Except thinking takes me back to the boy Jake was. Where is he now? What did we do wrong? I shut my eyes and take a deep breath. The list, Kate, back to the list. I fetch my laptop from the sitting room. I'd drawn the curtains this morning before Joe and I left to keep out prying eyes and lenses, but coming in from the bright sun, I'm blinded by the sudden darkness. I feel my way to the sofa and open the lid of the computer. I go to sit down, but I can hear them talking outside. I think I even recognise voices. It's so surreal to be cowering in here with my friends outside. But I straighten my shoulders and walk away from them. I've got a job to do, too. It's a fishing operation, casting my net across every word contained in this stream of teenage consciousness. I copy the emails into one document and search for different keywords. I start with Jake. I have to. I need to know what the police know. His name comes up repeatedly, but I notice she also calls him JW. Mostly in the later emails, JW this, Jake that. Alex seems in two minds. Sometimes she's all about my son, talking about how kind he is, his lovely eyes, his beautiful hands, how she hopes he'll ask her out, how she tries to catch his attention, what he said, how he looked at her. My son, the heartthrob. But at other times, she's impatient with him, complaining that he's in her face. Girls, I think. Not that I know, never having had one. It is only later that I realise Jake is also referred to in the first emails when Alex talks about someone called the Stoner, who sits smoking joints in the dorm when he isn't clearing tables. It's him. I put this other Jake away and move on. A search for Lars leads me to his friend, Diederik. They were moving on to Myanmar. And there's a reference to Amsterdam. Suppose he smokes dope all the time at home. He says everyone does it in Amsterdam. And Lars's plan to study sound engineering when he gets back. Alex doesn't sound impressed by him. She says she's frightened for Rosie, that she's so out of control, doing drugs with Lars. She must have expected drinking in clubs. What teenager wouldn't? But she'd been put in charge of a girl she didn't really know. Alex's fears are spelled out in full, and I feel for her. She was so out of her depth. At 18, to be dealing with this must have been terrible. Bloody Rosie, I catch myself thinking. Stop it, Kate. You're getting too involved already. On and on the emails go, with Rosie spinning further and further out of control in Alex's innocent eyes. It'll be all right, became her mantra. And I can picture her crossing her fingers when she was thinking it, like in a child's game. But the growing sense of impending doom shouts out at me. Why didn't you do something, Alex? If only you'd rung home. Your mum could have told you what to do. That's what mums are for. I find another bit about Lars. Rosie was sleeping with him by then, according to Alex. Went up to our room today and walked in on her and Lars. So embarrassing. Rosie shouted at me to get out. I mean, it's my room too. Lars came out still putting on his shirt and said sorry. Rosie pretended nothing had happened when I went in. She's weird like that. She said Lars was taking her to another club tonight. He's going to do some DJing. He's calling himself DJ Rappo. Crappo, more like. I googled DJ Rappo, Lars, and Amsterdam. He's there, smiling sleepily at me from his profile picture. Lars de Vries. He's got his own website. Thank you, social media, I hear myself say out loud. I've got there ahead of Joe. He's annoyed to be a step behind. I had to drive back to the office, Kate. Cut me some slack. But as excited as I am when I give him the name. Okay, I'll ring whoever we use in Holland. Who do we use?